Welcome to an episode of The Catbird Speaks. We are so happy to resume our podcast after a month hiatus. This is the podcast for BP Southside, the Baseball Perspectives, a local site covering the White Sox. You can find this podcast, of course, it's posted on our site. You can also look for it on our Blog Talk Radio page. And you can subscribe to it on iTunes. Just, if you can get over my strange pauses. Joining us today, Nick Schaefer in Manhattan.
Yeah, back from Ireland as of 4 or 5 hours ago.
And in Austin, Texas, Colin Whitchurch, back with us for the first time in 6 months or so.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Long time no talk.
We are talking live as the White Sox are blowing, I guess it's a scoreless game until that. I think the best thing for our listeners would be to just live react to this game that will be over for 12 hours by the time they listen to this.
Hey, who are you talking? I don't think you introduced yourself to the listeners.
Oh, I'm James Fegan. I'm the editor of BP Southside.
Some sort of subordinate editor, perhaps, who answers to someone else? Or
no, I'm the editor-in-chief.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That sounds impressive.
Matt Adams is the deputy editor. He's below me. Sometimes I call him up and insult him.
Yeah, but he does...
That's okay, because that's how the org chart works.
But since he's deputy editor, he wears that, sheriff's badge, that, old-timey Western sheriff's badge around and talks like that all the time.
I hear he sleeps in the belt, the deputy belt. It's got, a little walkie-talkie on it that just has our Slack.
He's never denied it.
He has not.
Also, currently, the Indians are demonstrating... That, yeah, I mean, this isn't, I don't want to take a shot at the Cubs, but there are teams in the NL that that have been ripping off these win streaks where, and then you look at who they've been playing, and it's like, oh, they just went on a road trip or they just had a homestand against the Reds and Brewers. And, oh man, look, their run differential shot up 40 runs. Cleveland's up 13-0 on Cincinnati. I think they beat them by a touchdown again yesterday, right?
Yeah, because our friend Jason Lucart was talking about, this is the first time they scored, 12 runs in back-to-back games since, the Albert Bell years.
Yeah, they've scored 28 runs, and they're not even, in the two games combined, they're not even done today, so. Reds pitching is pretty special.
Outstanding citizen Alfredo Simone started for the Reds today.
Yeah, I am thrilled to see Simone get, nuked out of the league. I am sad to see Steve Delabar walking five dudes.
Yeah, it's a former All-Star Steve Delabar.
In a third of an inning.
Yeah, can't wait till they put some more relievers on, 3 month hot streaks into the All-Star game this year. It'll be really great.
That's why I was pumping the Matt Albers campaign until he started sucking recently.
I mean, the nice thing about having, a 30-game scoreless streak is that you can get shelled a couple times and you're still in the mid-twos.
Yeah.
Especially
All-star
if some of those...
Matt Albers, make it happen.
And some of his getting shelled, a lot of those were inherited runners, so he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
They didn't cut him. We're in a weird, kind of somewhat satisfied place these days because the White Sox are a first-place baseball team, which is not what I would have predicted. Nor did I at the beginning of the season. I don't think any of us called them to win the division.
I think Ethan did. Yeah. I think Ethan did.
He wasn't even 21.
Ethan seemed like he was most negative. It couldn't have been Ethan.
Pretty sure he picked them to win the division.
We have some bet with Mau Rubio about this, so I think it should be in a table I have somewhere.
Well, fortunately, I mean, the White Sox have been in a little, for this year, I guess they hit a little mini slump last.
They've lost back-to-back series, and they're currently losing while we're talking.
Yeah, fortunately, their back-to-back series losses were of the two out of three variety each, right? Whereas the Tigers spawned a whole lot of "is Brad Ausmus getting fired" stuff, and the Royals have had a lot of trouble scoring, and the Twins are just.
They're
just making my day. They're just making my day every day. It's been great.
Yeah, the Twins are tough.
And they're currently beating the Tigers.
the Tigers are pretty much toast. Brad Ausmus pretty much lost his mind last night and has been acting kind of like erratically and like he's folding under pressure for the last couple of weeks.
Well, they hung him out to dry at the end of last season, and then they like brought him back in as the, I mean, the lamest of lame duck managers at this point.
Yeah, he's not in a good situation. Ethan did indeed pick the White Sox to win the AL Central.
I thought he picked them to win. Maybe it was in the like internal BP staff like voting.
I think he was
consistent. Thing that they did. I don't. Not them. Them Utes. Them Utes aren't consistent.
He did pick the Rangers to win the World Series, so that would make the White Sox losing 2 out of 3 very forgivable.
Yeah, their offense scares me a lot.
The Rangers,
and not just for their ability to punch you in the face.
Yeah, well, I mean, Odor suspended takes a bit of the sting out of it, but the White Sox bullpen made what looked terrible, and the Rangers offense looked amazing at the same time.
I mean, perhaps that's kind of what sparked the panic, or at least the concern from this week, is that they could have easily taken both of these series. They had like a freaking 5-run lead in Texas in the inning, and their bullpen all of a sudden had its first meltdown of the season, though against a kind of understandable opponent to have that happen to. And the Yankees are just not a very good team.
No, but it's what happens is, and it's kind of frustrating because they aren't very good. But then if they have a lead on you in like the fifth, they can just sort of like hit the simulate rest of game button, and it's very tedious.
Yeah, that definitely happened to them Saturday. But Sunday they definitely kind of just couldn't execute to the level that we were expecting them based on what they've been able to do earlier this season. They just elongated a lot of innings. Brett Laurie had a really bad game in the field. They issued tons of walks. It wasn't crisp. But in general, since we basically haven't updated the team, had a podcast in the month, things are kind of positive, and mostly I think the main things to address are kind of like the maintenance of a playoff bid.
It's nice to just have like a hole here and there to fill, as opposed to previous years where it was like, well, maybe they'll be contenders if they fill these 5 spots.
Yeah.
And now we're here and it's like shortstop's not ideal. Catcher's a little bit question mark, depending on what you think of it. And then the back end of the rotation, obviously, but those are fixable problems. As we talked about, the rest of the AL Central isn't exactly lighting the world on fire. So, we talk about the holes on the White Sox, and we could go through probably every team in the AL Central, and they might have the fewest holes, them or Cleveland at least, as far as what you need to plug to be contenders late into the season.
Well, Brantley just went back on the DL, so...
He did.
If, A lot of the Cleveland optimism was couched in like, well, Brantley's coming back like really early on, so he's going to be fine. And I guess they've been surviving Carrasco's absence just fine. Bauer's thrown a few really good games, so I don't want to overstate it, but I feel like people just assume players are going to come back from injury. It's like as soon as the injury is over, they're just back and that's it. And stuff like we've heard from Mark a few times about how shoulders are really kind of scary and don't always heal the way you'd like. And I think that goes for hitters. Obviously, it's not 100% of their livelihood like a pitcher's, but I don't think you can just assume Brantley's going to come back at the end of this 15-day DL and just be 100%.
No, and he was what was he back for 2 weeks before he went back on the DL? And he was off to a terrible start, obviously small sample size, but I don't know if the fact that he wasn't yet at 100% again, I mean, I imagine that probably played a role in it, but if I were a Cleveland fan, I'd probably be worried about how much he's going to be able to contribute this year.
Yeah, for sure. And if he's out, that, it was such a bunched up, the projections were so bunched up for those top 4 teams in the division that, banking wins and talking about erosion of key players can wind up making a significant difference in the outcome.
It's actually surprising that they've I don't have the standings in front of me. I don't know where Cleveland's at right now, but considering they lost Carrasco, you know, Kluber's had some fine starts, and I think he's going to be fine in the long run, but he got off to kind of a rough start.
Salazar's been insane.
Yeah. He's been...
They're 18-17. I'm going to go ahead and assume they held on to this 12-run lead against Cincinnati and say they'll be 19-17 by the time our listeners get this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Reds they have decent, but not that good.
You know, Pecota loves them, and it's so much of that seems dependent on them being like a really excellent defensive team, and I don't know that that's a sure thing.
They're trying Chisenhall in center field now. I've seen that run out a few times.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Yikes.
I haven't watched closely enough to see if he's surviving out there, but I know he's had one or at least two starts in center field already.
What's up with the Royals?
I just think that they've always, that even in these last couple of years, that they had really thin margins for error to keep it all working. And you know, I don't want to start shoveling dirt on them yet because, you know, they're 18 and 19. It's not like they're, they didn't twins it and, like, regardless of team quality, bury themselves. But I thought that what Kansas City was doing was very fragile. And I know that, like, what's frustrating about the conversation is you can be like, man, their rotation looks like garbage and half of their offense looks really terrible and they don't really, you know, like, their offense probably isn't that good. And they'd say, people would turn around and say, aha.
Well, fewest runs in the American League.
People would turn around and be like, well, that didn't matter the last 2 years. They went to the World Series the last 2 years. Like, yeah, but it's not like, it doesn't help them that their offense sucks. It's not like a good thing that their rotation was terrible. Like, they succeeded in spite of it. It's not like it, like, built character to have a crappy rotation and that, like, pushed them over the edge. Hosmer's having the best year of his career.
Is Moustakas really coming back this weekend?
I mean, he's been swinging, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's a lot quicker than I thought it was, because he's pretty much... I mean, we were joking the other day, what's their franchise record for home runs was 36? And
yeah,
he got off to... I don't know about the rest of the stats, but he was off to a really strong start from power-wise. His ISO was ridiculously high for a while, and obviously they're replacing him with Chesler Cuthbert, talking about their depth issues. So having him back will help. But even with him, obviously, their offense wasn't great despite all of his power.
And what do you think is more likely at this point, that, you know, a guy like, I don't know, Alcides Escobar, or I guess Alex Gordon's the one that's really looks like a, you know, I think there's he can do better, a lot better than this. And I think Morales can do slightly better. I mean, can do better than this, but it's not a guarantee because he had some dead years before last year.
What was Gordon's injury last year? Was it a wrist?
Groin, I think.
Groin.
Oh, I thought it was wrist for some reason.
But, like, it's not like this is too far off from how I see a lot of these guys. I mean, Kane... his power is down this year,
even with a three homer game.
but it's not like I'm looking at, oh well, Omar Infante is better than this. It's like, well, he's probably not. Like, this is kind of Omar Infante. So yeah. I don't know where the surplus offense is really coming from on this roster.
Yeah,
and there's nobody on. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Playing more Jared Dyson is not really panning out as a great idea.
No, and the guys that they traded. Away, you know, like, they've traded away all the reinforcements. So, I mean, it's great that they banked that World Series last year, but, you know, they don't have Jake Odorizzi in house anymore. They don't have Sean Manaea in house anymore. They don't have Will Myers here. So, you know, those are the dudes you'd be looking for, and they're just, you know, they're gone. So,
and the crazy thing is, at least for the first couple weeks of the season, their offense, or I mean, not their offense, their pitching staff was playing way over their heads. Ian Kennedy had a great first couple starts of the season. Volquez was Volquez.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, well, they just put two-fifths of their rotation on the DL. Obviously, Chris Young was a disaster and should probably be out of baseball at this point.
Medlin was even worse.
Yeah, yeah. Those two, I mean,
Chris Young is giving good innings in the World Series last year.
Yeah, he saved them, like, just bailed them out of horrible situations repeatedly.
Yeah.
It's crazy how things just can just end very abruptly in this league.
Oh, he is 37.
But, you know, he was like, you don't, like, people just don't fade out of effectiveness, like, the way that projections often, like, see it. Like, people just, like, they lose something and they're just done.
He still has a K to BB of, like, almost 3. But he's also giving up, he's also given up 13 home runs in 32 innings, so.
Like, Soria has been good for them. Yordano Ventura is a mess. Really, like, the only steady thing is Volquez. And Kennedy's been all right, but the peripherals are once again showing that this guy gives up way too many home runs. Alex Gordon is, like, his power's way down, and he's striking out 30% of his plate appearances, which, like, never happened during his prime at all.
The thing with Ian Kennedy is it feels like half of a smart move, where it's like, ah, well, you know, you can mask a guy who gives up home runs in this park or a little bit, and maybe we'll get him, you know, get good value on this deal because of our defense and all that. And it's like, yeah, but you paid, like, full price for him anyway.
Yeah, it's like acquiring.
He was in Petco before, so, like, it's not. It's not like he's going to get some huge boost here.
Also, his main thing is, like, whiffs to put in front of, like, a historic defense.
Yeah. Sorry, what was that?
His main, like, attribute is getting whiffs to put in a massive, like, ballpark against, like, a historically great defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a nutshell, Ian Kennedy is, I mean, he's fine rotation, you know, middle of the rotation kind of guy, but when you're a team like Kansas City that doesn't exactly have a bunch of extra money to spend, it just seemed like an odd way to spend your money.
Yeah, because if the argument is, well, in that park in front of that defense, he'll do great, it's like, okay, so then maybe get a guy who doesn't cost $72 million.
Exactly, if it's that easy.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, our regular hating on the division segment, it feels a lot better to do while the White Sox are 5 games up.
Instead of, why must we lose to these idiots?
Or it's like they're 12, 10 downs. Like, yeah, but all these guys are total jamokes.
Yeah, I was talking in the Slack chat a few weeks or a week or so ago about how I listened to Aaron Gleeman of recent
our colleague
employee. Yeah, I was listening to his podcast, and it was coming off of the White Sox most recent sweep of the Twins, and they were just bemoaning the fact that the White Sox were so, everything went their way, and they just looked so good, and oh my God, that outfield defense. If we could play outfield defense like that, and I'm like, what universe am I living in?
Yeah, right? It was, I listened to them semi-regularly in bad times for the White Sox, and I gotta say, I have been listening even more this year as the Twins, because I'm a petty, small, horrible person, and I got a lot of joy out of, and Gleeman and Bonas seem like great dudes, and I'm sad that they are stuck with this horrible team, but it is somewhat satisfying to hear somebody else just being like, the wheels have fallen off, the plane is on fire, and I just don't know, like, what to say anymore about a team that's not the White Sox for once.
I think the title of that podcast was Total Organizational Failure or something.
Total System Failure, I think.
It was a quote from the owner.
That's right.
Yep.
Perfect.
The White Sox are in the process of... Where are you going to say?
I was going to say in the process of fixing Dallas Keuchel.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Well,
maybe it's really clever to do that and then unleash him on the rest of the AL.
I guess maybe I should be thankful that they are playing Houston and I am unable to watch because of MLB TV blackout restrictions.
I live in Manhattan. It's pronounced Houston.
Houston.
I'm in New York. I get the joke.
You guys are very sophisticated, as am I for make. I am smart for making that joke, and you guys are smart for getting it. So we should all feel great.
Definitely.
I have a masochistic thought experiment to offer.
Go ahead.
So the White Sox, like, outfield defense is super sharp because they brought in, you know, legitimate defensive center fielder Austin Jackson to play center and allowed Eaton to no longer be stretch playing that and just kind of, like, go off in right, and Melky Cabrera no longer playing with, like, kind of a lower range center fielder is now, you know, more just fine in left field. So last night I was up late and watching Trace Thompson hit two homers against the Angels.
Stop.
He's now slugging over 600. Could they have still have their super outfield defense if they had just kept Trace and made him the everyday center fielder and split the difference by signing David Fries in free agency? David Fries, who was basically around until like 3 days before the season started, or basically spring training started.
Has he been good this year?
He's been himself. So he's slightly above average offensively and passable defensively.
I mean, Frazier's obviously massively better defensively, I think.
But Jackson can't hit.
Yeah. He looks like he should be able to.
He gives good plate appearances, but the results are quite bad.
Yeah, his power is just gone. His power is just gone. I think if he... It's I don't know how that happens to a dude between age 25 and 28, but there's a lot of things pro athletes do that I guess I can't relate to, so maybe I shouldn't dwell on that too much. But yeah, Matt's been the one who's been sort of leaning this way harder and harder, more vocally, where it's like, yeah, all those warning track fly balls.
Those Nicole were Bennett. His big bombs of the year.
Yeah, that was just Austin Jackson just can't hit it out of the park anymore.
Warning track power.
Yeah, which is a shame because his glove is such a virtue. And I mean, I guess anything with his bat is a bonus. But I don't. When you're doing that with shortstop as well, it can start to snowball a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, part of this argument, if you want to even call that, is belief in that Trace Thompson can be an above average hitter or even an average major league hitter for the duration of the season. Right. I don't know.
So his current bananas numbers in LA, I'm going to read them and you're going to cry, are obviously him being used a lot more strategically like he was in the second half with the White Sox. He hasn't been in an everyday situation. It's kind of a weird point of contention because he has to, like, he's fighting through Carl Crawford, who obviously is not as impressive, but is tested and veteran-y and all that. David Roberts actually got asked about Trace Thompson today and dropped a sample size as to why he's not playing yet full-time.
I saw that.
Really?
Which was kind of awesome. But Trace is hitting 292, 338, 611. Got six homers and 77 plate appearances.
Sure, but if you combine that with last year...
The K rate is back up. The walks are down a bit, but the power is just enormous.
You also have to factor in that if Trace were with the White Sox, that the White Sox would be getting attention on national TV every time Clay Thompson gave him a shout-out at a press conference.
Yeah, and said now it's this cute little thing that the West Coast has all to themselves.
Exactly.
I'm going to wait before I torture myself with that. I mean, Semi and... You know, if Samardzija had pitched well and the White Sox had made a playoff push, are we, like, really crying about Marcus Semien, for example, after his, you know, 98 WRC last year?
Maybe. I mean, he'd be nice to have it short. Also, he'd probably still not be a very good shortstop. Like, I don't know. He might be better than Rollins, but... He's not a great fit there.
No, I you know, and maybe they don't add Laurie and who knows.
Oh, the 25th pick in the draft this year. Come on.
I'm not ready to kill myself over Thompson yet.
Yeah.
But it bears watching. For sure.
It's just hard for me to get worked up over Thompson start just because I love having Todd Frazier on this team so much. And I know that there's a domino effect of it, but
do you think Robin displaces Eaton for Trace Thompson?
Probably not. Yeah.
So we still have Eaton in center and Trace in right.
Jackson being a career center fielder, being an established guy in the division, having like more years on Eaton probably made that tradition a lot easier to do.
Well, also, I mean, that they said
even
setting
things this week that like he doesn't want this to be permanent necessarily. So obviously, that's probably who's going to move him back at this point.
Right. Right.
That was the reason Jackson signed here too, was it not? He said that the reason he signed with the White Sox over some of the other offers he had is because he was going to be able to play center field here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Angels wanted to corner outfield him. I think the Indians probably would have played him in center field, but he had no guarantee that he'd like. He probably saw the writing on the wall that an opportunity to be full time here was a lot better. And then when LaRoche retired, it just the seas parted for him.
Yeah.
Maybe he.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if he'd signed with Cleveland and then Abraham Almonte got a suspension, he might have had a clearer path to playing time there too. But
event was he more likely to foresee, Abraham Almonte being popped or Adam LaRoche retiring?
Does he have to predict the manner in which LaRoche retires, or just the result?
Just the result.
Oh, then yeah. I think I might have bet on LaRoche retiring more than Abraham Almonte getting popped, just because he was so bad and he was old and hurt.
Yeah, but in March, nobody retires in March.
I think he was just never recovered.
Michael Kadire did last year.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And it was very similar circumstances prior to all the Drake stuff coming to light.
You remember that one day where we all thought that LaRoche's back had just given out on him, and I even wrote about how it was sad, and then shit hit the fan, and away I could have never imagined.
I'm pretty sure that the Drake LaRoche news broke about 6 hours after your I'm sad about Adam LaRoche post went up. You're like, well, never mind.
Felt really like pretty good about that thing. I thought it was really like, you know, conscientious.
Yeah.
I wrote some very sympathetic tweets before the truth came out. Like, oh, that poor guy, his back, his knees.
Got a feel for
only
him.
Only career he's known. Yeah, I can sympathize.
Definitely can sympathize. Definitely not, you know, a 99th percentile weird person that I can never even put myself in the shoes of at any point.
Oh, is Rodon getting squeezed here?
I mean, well,
I was just looking at this, and he's got 30. He's thrown 34 strikes and 25 balls, which is not a great ratio. But he has 4 strikeouts and 0 walks.
Yeah,
at least as far as my game day is up to date.
I've seen
that's all I have to rely on.
I saw a full count strikeout earlier, and that sort of thing will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I have derail this a little bit.
We could talk about Rodon's framing.
Okay. And yeah, that debate seems to be developing, and I just it feels so hopeless to like try to draw any conclusions from that, because there's just no way I'm ever going to get complete information. So I just don't, like, I just can't muster the energy up about it.
I only just gave up a 3-2 bomb, so.
Well, that happens when you throw pitches 1 and 2 right down the middle, and your batter gets spotted at 2-0 count anyway.
I mean, it's hard to. I'm sure getting stuff in the margins would help him. His command is not great.
His velocity looks good today.
Yeah, his 96 mile an hour home run pitch, but that's only a mile cheer up.
Yeah.
It's only going to be a footnote when the White Sox get no hit by Dallas Keuchel. Oh, perfect gamed by Dallas Keuchel.
Always good to have more errors than base runners.
Oh, and play runs. Spoiler alert, James.
Yeah, seriously. James, you're spoiling this for our listeners.
I got the lead on everybody being in Elkhart, Indiana. That's where the news starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, the ancient Greeks had that shrine at Apollo at Delphi for Apollo. And Elkhart is basically that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that was what I was alluding to. Once again, we're thinking of the exact same thing.
So I was just looking at Abreu a little bit, and it just, I'm not really seeing anything different in his, just at a glance, I'm not really seeing anything different, you know, like his zone control or anything like that. And it's not like he's, I was looking at Rendon with my buddy the other day, and he was like, what's going on with him? And I was like, he's just like popping it up on the infield a ton all of a sudden, which is obviously a terrible, it's like one of the, is that the worst batted ball outcome? Like the infield fly ball?
Pretty much.
So, like, there isn't anything like that happening. I'm not, like, it looks like he's chasing out of the zone less.
Yeah, it's better.
He's, like, I think his strikeouts are down. His walk rate is tied with his rookie year for his best. His ISO, his BABIP, like, so are you guys still assuming he's going to, like, start breathing fire on everyone again soon, and it's just a matter of time?
I do. I know, James.
They're going to need it.
Yeah, you were out the other day, James.
More resigned to the idea that 2015 Abreu might be the real guy.
Yeah, but he hasn't been that.
Well, yeah, I'm saying like the fire breathing part might just be like.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Slowly just slides back into being in a slightly or solidly above average first baseman who's not a star.
I see. But, I mean, for him to get to that, and I know this is like a fallacy, but, like, I mean, there's going to be, like, some sort of hot streak to come, I assume.
Well,
but,
yes, they would necessitate that at some point.
Right. Right, to get to, like, 2015, he'd still have to, like, have a couple, like, really solid months. But
it's nice that we're not completely reliant on him for power anymore.
That is lovely.
Like, because he does go through these funks where, you know, he can hit five bombs in a week and then he can go a couple of weeks without one. And, you know, last year, 2 years ago, if he wasn't hitting bombs, no one was hitting bombs. And Todd Frazier is on a 40 home run pace or close to it, and 50 home run pace. Yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't take a genius to come up with theories about why the 2015 White Sox offense sucked. But I do think that they were disproportionately terrible against pitchers who couldn't strike people out but never walked anybody and gave up a bunch of home runs, because it was like, oh, the only way you can hurt this guy is hit home runs, and this team is incapable of doing that, so you're going to get shredded by, like, I don't know, Josh Tomlin or something.
Adam Eaton was second on the team in home runs last year.
Yep. Well, at least they're not too dependent on the home run anymore, like people used to complain about. Yeah. You remember when people said that, like, earnestly and loudly?
Yeah, that was the whole when they traded Carlos Lee away and let Mags walk, and it's okay, we're not going to be as reliant on the home run anymore.
We're not going to, quote, sit around and wait for a three-run homer. Like people just put their bats on their shoulder and strike out. Someone else will hit this home run. I don't feel like it. What the hell universe are people talking about? The 2006 White Sox hit 236 homers.
And when it gets nothing.
Right. Yeah, that was the problem. Not that Mark Burley had the worst year of his career.
How many games did the 06 White Sox win?
90.
That was definitely the most depressing 90-win season I can imagine.
And that was
remember not being happy.
They had a great start.
What?
That was the most games they won since then.
I know.
Yeah,
I just remember that was the year I went to the most games I ever went to, because after the World Series, I bought the 13-game season ticket package. And, you know, living an hour and a half, 2 hours away growing up, that was a lot for me. I'd drive in essentially 2 days a month and just trying to catch Detroit for those last two or so months, and every time they'd face them, they'd get shut out by, like, Kenny Rogers. I just remember being so fucking frustrated with that team, and then looking back on it, I'm like, man, that team was good. They won 90 damn games.
Yeah. The offense was stacked. The pitching just gave out in the second half.
The year they made the playoffs, playoffs combined, still won less games than that team.
Yeah.
So, Nick's favorite topic. How do we feel about Avisail Garcia, designated hitter?
Nice.
Because, you know, with kind of trade focus being on pitching, there's not really much pressure to push Avi out right now.
I mean, if you just look at his, from like, team speak perspective, like, how would I justify this? It'd be very easy as the GM, you know, if the manager's like, well, like, are you still worried about Avisail? It's like, well, he's hitting, he's got, like, a 7, he's got, like, an 800 OPS, something like that. He's doing all right.
786 at the moment.
It's, like, very easy to justify his presence from that regard. I guess his ISO is just up this year.
Yeah, it was up. Which, Brady might just. Yeah, okay, he's fine. I'll leave it at that.
Spoiler alert!
Did he get hit by a pitch?
Like, carried off by a massive bee, so the White Sox are probably going to be able to avoid the rest of his contract.
Are you saying that the perfect game is done? And the no-hitter is done, and maybe the shutout's done?
James, can we cancel the post-game show?
Is this the post-game show?
Hang on, I got an MLB.com at bat update that is ahead of the MLB game day somehow.
That's yes. Not going to help his in-zone percentage, because that ball was like 3 inches off the plate.
Game day has it like right on the edge.
Speaking of Avisail, though, he's hitting cleanup tonight, so obviously he's great.
Obviously he's great.
James gave him a 2% chance of making the All-Star team in today's post.
Yeah, basically on the odds that, like, there's a 2% chance that the universe we know it as a lie.
You gave him a better percent than, who did you give a 1% to? Melky?
Lori, because that freaking AL second base race is stacked.
I know. Lori,
like, as good as he's been and as crazy, like, BABIP run he's on, he's, like, the fifth best hitter in the AL second baseman.
What if he gets in on the, like, utility slot because he can play third?
That's not with how the AL All-Star rosters work, Nick.
No, but dude, they have that new like Willie Bloomquist slot now.
Yeah, Brock Holt.
Yeah, they've been doing that. They've in the last few years, All-Star managers have like specifically been picking like a utility All-Star.
Yeah, there was Brock Holt.
He's not
in
a
the
utility
AL.
All-Star. He's the everyday second baseman.
There was Josh Harrison a few years ago in Pittsburgh 2 years ago, I think, and.
He plays more than zero. He could play more than 0% at third base. All I'm saying.
He played second base every game of the season. Todd Frazier's face got knocked off, and they brought in Carlos Sanchez to play it, even though Carlos Sanchez is 5 feet tall.
I don't. You left someone off of that too. I think. Did you mention Odor among the second basemen?
I did not. Odor is not hitting as well as Lowry.
Really? I think I'm just my opinion skewed because I just saw him destroy the ball against the White Sox last week.
I mean, he's good, and he stands to the fact that the second base crop is freaking loaded, but, like, it's really loaded.
Altuve's having an insane year.
Yeah. And Cano's having a big bounce-back year. Doesn't he lead the league in homers or something?
Yeah, he's tied with Frazier.
Yeah.
Lord knows I'm not going to check James' article to find out, though.
Nah, me neither. Going nuts. Who else?
Pedroia's doing fine.
Pedroia's doing fine. He's still below Lowry. He's like sixth or seventh in the league. And
you mentioned Logan Forsyth, who could get a bid. He'd also be a multi-position bid. Like
he just went on the DL, though.
Huh?
He just went on the DL, though.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, his shoulder is hurt. Brian Dozier is like the worst qualified second baseman. In the AL, and he's not doing that bad. Like, he's obviously a disappointment for Brian Dozier, but, like, he's playable.
Remember when they bought out all his Arb years but didn't get any free agency years?
Jesus, that organization, I would go insane. The Phil Hughes extension starts next year.
It is a pretty bizarre world, not just with the White Sox, but the White Sox and Mariners are, you know, looking competent, and then you get franchises like the Twins, who are just falling apart.
Like the
Orioles second baseman with above average hitting lines.
Yeah, and then like even the guys down at the bottom, like Jed Lowry and stuff, are like,
yeah, he's a solid second baseman.
Is Jonathan Scope one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, Scope. Scope has those that hilarious like strikeout to walk ratio, but that dude's got power.
Starling Castro.
He's an Orioles hitter. He's an Orioles hitter. Like, I'll leave it at that.
There's a lot of nutty isos going on for these tiny little men.
Johnny Giovitella up there.
He sucks.
Scope is 6'1", 225.
One step too far, Colin. I don't think Avisail Garcia is probably fixed. He's better, probably. No. But I'm not seeing a ton of pull power just yet.
If you're not going to...
seems like he's gotten a lot more swing happy recently.
If you're not, yeah, if you're not going to play him in the field and he's willing to just be selling out for power, I could see him and like actually take a few walks. You can fit him on a major league roster.
He's way too comfortable right now. Right now he's swinging at everything. Like even his 3-hit game against the Yankee Stadium, he saw like 7 pitches. He's swinging out of his shoes again. I don't think it's going to last very long.
Hmm.
Put me on record.
Well, he's not.
We talk about they've got banked wins already this season, regardless of what kind of future streak they go on. Where as long as Avisail's hot streak doesn't like make the organization want to commit to him long term, it's like, sure, let's ride it out while he's playing well. And if he comes down to earth, which he probably will, let's still have the option on the table of replacing the hell out of him as soon as that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing with that, this point is kind of the rotation has kind of demanded help at this point.
You ready to bail on Miguel Gonzalez already?
I'm probably more willing. I mean, Miguel Gonzalez has been bad.
Yeah.
But I really don't like Leto's profile. Just saying, like, I think I'd be worried about Mark Burley if he had the worst like strikeout rate in the league. Certainly, like the guy who's used to being like throwing 95 and striking out like 8 guys per 9, and who can't get anyone to miss his fastball. Just so many negative indicators with him, like that he's pitching in a way that he never has before. I don't have a lot of faith in it. April was great. Don't know if he's going to survive the season in the rotation.
Yeah. It's just so weird. It's so weird to me to be... I still don't feel like I can endorse spending resources to add to pitching because that's like the one thing they've been able to do internally.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but I'm just looking at this top...
Well, that's why Rodon is such a wild card.
I'd have faith in Rodon kind of normalizing to be a number 3. There'll be ups and downs. I'm maybe thinking that we were probably overbold and saying, like, he's going to overtake Quintana this year. For no other reason than Quintana has somehow made another leap in his performance.
Yeah, Quintana throws harder than Rodon.
Yeah, Quintana has, like, more whistle on his fastball than Sale. It's just insane.
James, I think you guys are both right that, like, the 4 and 5 spots in the starting rotation like need to be addressed in some way. It's just it feels short-sighted. Like to say that like Avisail Garcia is not the problem. Like you've got Rollins and Saladino at short. You have you're committed to a glove only in center. And Avisail Garcia is your full-time DH, and your bench is, like, dudes like Jerry Sands. Like, I don't know that I'm ready to say that. And maybe it's not an either-or proposition. It's just hard for me to imagine this team adding multiple pieces that...
Multiple significant ones.
Of significance. I suppose they could still upgrade the bench. They could still find a guy, maybe a platoon bat with Avisail. Without compromising their resources to that could be devoted to the starting rotation without compromising, internal depth. But it's not, I think they're going to have to get creative.
Yeah, it's like hard to figure what specific piece you would want, because like you could definitely upgrade shortstop, but you know everyone wants like plus hitting shortstop. Those things aren't just hanging around the trade market.
Right.
You'd possibly want a better hitting catcher, but you know unless Jonathan LaCroix, like there's a coupon for him in the newspaper today, like that's going to be like a major haul. Everyone wants a plus hitting center fielder. Those things aren't easily had either. Do you get like a DH, but is it someone who just sits on the bench while you wait out Avisaíl to start sucking? What kind of like bench player would you specifically target? You need like a left-handed guy, but like you want a left-handed guy who's, you know, an impact bat when he goes in, but a left-handed guy who's an impact bat is basically an everyday player.
Right.
It's hard to figure out who exactly they would target, but they could definitely need depth, need more playable people so that, you know, Todd Frazier and Brett Laurie don't die of their joints wearing out by September.
Matt Joyce is killing the ball for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that'd be a guy.
Right.
Why is Pittsburgh shit?
And also every team with the exception of maybe the Angels, Oakland, and Minnesota are going to be in contention until right around the trade deadline, probably. Maybe, depending on who you think of anyone else. It's going to be the majority of the American League isn't going to want to be sellers.
No, you're right. I mean, you could grab... You'd probably be looking at the National League.
Yeah, the Reds and the Brewers.
And the problem is some of those teams like the Braves are just so damn bad. Like you couldn't even, like there's nothing you'd even want. Don't say Beckham.
I was gonna say AJ.
He's a veteran.
Lefty bat. Guys, I'm gonna blame it on jet lag because it's like.
Yeah.
Because it's 2:30 in the morning for me right now in my internal clock, so I am going to bid you guys a good night.
Should we call it anyway, James?
Sure, why not?